Well, I don't know if I look sweaty, but I feel sweaty, so I apologize. I hope I don't sound sweaty for everybody listening, because that would be super weird.
You sound a little bit slippery.
It is hot outside, and I just got back from a run, so I'm a little damp around. David, how are you feeling?
Did you guys hear the rumor that it's going to be 105 on Thursday, which would be tomorrow? Did you guys hear that rumor in the Northeast?
No.
Okay, good. Maybe it's just a rumor. Because it doesn't say it on my weather prediction chart.
No.
Wait, I want to know more about this weather prediction chart.
It's the app on the phone. I couldn't think of a name for it.
Your Farmer's Almanac, maybe?
Yeah, I couldn't pull up the clear words to describe what that was. I had to clumsily work my way through that.
The wizard on the TV told me that. David, how you feeling?
I'm about 95%. I got over COVID pretty quick. In a couple days, good. I was feeling really good. I hit 90, and then I've just been hanging around 90-95% for like a week now. So
I thought you were going to say that was your temperature. I was like, you know, if you're at 90, that's not good.
Yeah, well.
I think you're going to say your temperature is like, what do they call that, a low-grade temperature when it's below what you're supposed to be?
Trying to break 75. I'm just not
you should
there.
Be on ice, bro.
90 is my new normal.
Yeah. Mm.
So tested negative. I feel fine. I'm just a little stuffy, but I'm back to work. I'm working all week, so I'm doing all right.
Good. It's going around here. A few people at work have had it, or family members have had it, so people have been out, and you know, it's a pain. And we have a small team, so I am beginning to understand how difficult it would be to run like a significant company with significant workforce, and then just big swaths of those people just can't come to work for a week at a time or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's, man. And then we're school starts back next week, I believe. And so this week, we're like going to all the open houses and the orientations for all the kids. We have kids at three schools this year. But walking through the schools and seeing all of the teachers prepping and being in that, like, I mean, you don't have to wear a mask, but it'd be cool if you did, because we have a whole lot of stuff to do and a whole lot of people, and everybody's getting sick, you know, and it's this kind of just middle of the road kind of spot where everybody doesn't want to worry about it, but you also kind of have to worry about it a little bit because it's going around again. And
well, there was this one point where if you got COVID, you were most likely in the clear to not get it again. But now I keep hearing all these people around me are getting it for the second time.
Yeah.
And it takes you out for a week.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's a bummer. I wish it would go away. That would be nice. But.
Yeah. I've been able to avoid it since the beginning of the year.
Well, that's the thing. 2 weeks ago, we were bragging of how we did such a good job and we didn't get it through all this while Kelly's working in public health care, and somehow we avoided it. And then it said,
Louie.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Well, I'm glad you're feeling better. Yeah. And I hope everybody else stays well and doesn't get it. We're doing a thing this weekend, which this is not related to this, but it just made me think of it, getting people together. So we have I Like to Make Stuff, our Patreon group and our YouTube membership group. We call them the Maker Alliance. And it's just those two groups of people together. And they, on their own, I don't know if I've told you guys about this or not, but they came up with the idea of doing a Maker Alliance summer camp. And so they like built this entire thing on their own. They figured out all the logistics, got insurance, all this type of stuff. They brought it to us with this big, you know, can we do this? With like, they were asking permission kind of, but blessing more than anything else is, you know, like, is it okay if we all get together with under this name and all this stuff? And so they're running the entire thing, but we're helping out with some of the cost of it. But this weekend, they're getting together. They're running a camp, like a campground summer camp place, all getting together and having like Pinewood Derby races and classes and all sorts of stuff. And it's awesome, and it's all happening this weekend. And so I'm really excited. The reason I thought of it was because on our Discord server, they've all been like taking their COVID tests before they leave their house to drive down here for the weekend. So they're all posting pictures of their like, cool, I'm negative, let's go. But it's pretty awesome. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be this weekend. And it's a closed event to people in that group already. But anyway, that's exciting.
Yeah, my buddy Brian Prusa, he texted me the other day. He's like, hey, you coming down this weekend? And I was like, no. Also, what are you talking about? And he mentioned the Maker Alliance thing. And I was like, nope, but I'm going to be down there in about 5 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of. So, the three of us had a conversation before we started recording about what we're going to do. And we actually made more progress. I will say, I'm proud of us. Good job, guys. We made more progress in 5 minutes about a collaboration than we have ever made in the past, 25 years that we've been doing this podcast?
That's crazy.
Well, I think what we did, we stripped out the complications and made it simple and completely concise. And the idea of any typical open-ended project is difficult to get your head around because you could do anything. You can go anywhere. You could make anything. And then the choices are overwhelming. But we brought it into just, let's just do this. And then all of a sudden we could see an ending clearly.
And so the situation that we're talking about here is on September 10th, Louisville Maker Faire is happening, and Jimmy and David are both coming to my neck of the woods, and we're going to be at Louisville Maker Faire. I don't know what all we're doing yet. I haven't actually heard from them about what the schedule is, but we're going to probably do a live podcast and hang out for the day and at the fair and stuff.
I was talking to Larry last night, and he has Windmill Printing Press. They have a Heidelberg windmill print press there.
Hmm.
And so he wants me to crank it up and play with it and have fun with it and show people how it works. So that's going to be one of the things somewhere.
Awesome.
That's cool.
So they haven't fired it up in a long time. So we're just getting the conversation going about what it might need, if anything. I'm pretty sure it's fine, but we'll take a close look at it through pictures and decide.
Cool. Well, on top of that, the three of us were talking about just doing something, while the guys are in town, and so we came up with this idea today to work on something ahead of time, combine those things at the show, maybe at Maker Faire, and then also shoot some video at my place the next day and stuff. So anyway, that's and then are we going to give that thing away?
We're going to give that collaboration away, I think.
I'm not sure exactly how we'll do that.
But we should. We should give it away to somebody. We got to figure out. Maybe everybody has to write an essay, if you want to.
10 pages?
Yeah. 10? A one-page essay about why you deserve it. I can't stand when people ask that type of thing.
Why you're the best table haver person?
No, the idea of giving somebody homework as an adult just drives me in bananas. Because I remember having to be like, write an essay. And I was just like, I can't say what I said to the teachers here after show. So.
Well, yeah, we'll figure out how to give that away. I'm sure it'll be to somebody on Patreon or something. I don't know. We'll figure that out. But also be interesting to ship that thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jimmy's an expert at shipping large things, so we'll just leave it to him.
Just hire somebody with a van and just have a giant pocket full of money, and you can get anything put anywhere in this country.
Cool. You've got pockets full of money. I'm sure of it. So we'll just send the thing back with you, and then you can handle it from there. Cool. Well, what's been going on? What have you guys been up to?
Yeah, yesterday, the owner of the piano rebuild came over to pick it up. So we filmed his reaction. We filmed him playing some songs on it, and it came out so good. It's one of my favorite projects. It came out so freaking good. I just have to finish the video. And Clay, the owner, he's such an amazing musician. He can play anything on the guitar or the piano. And so we filmed, we set up all these cool slider shots of him playing on the piano. And he's playing one of his songs, he's singing. And I'm so excited to have this video done. This piano's been in my shop for like 3 or 4 months. It's in the way. It's been a pain. There were so many road bumps along the way, and I wish I could go back in time and refilm some of the things, because I just kind of did a like, this is what I did, and I show all the pieces being made and everything. What I should have done, and I learned a really good lesson, is why I made certain decisions to go this route and some of the road bumps that we hit. Because in the video, it just makes it look like it was a really easy project when there was just so many things that went wrong. And then the night before, I'm polishing it up, putting a coat of wax on it, and taking some armor off the plastic and getting it all perfect. And then I'm playing it. It's a real piano. It's got real strings in there, but it's got pickups in there so you can plug it in and amplify it and take it on the road. And I'm playing it through an amp, and all of a sudden it just stops in a huge buzz. Just bzzz. And I'm wiggling wires. I'm plugging into a different outlet. I'm turning off the AC, and he's supposed to be come over like in 12 hours. And I'm freaking out because I've had so many problems with this thing, and I was just so glad for it to be done. And I'm freaking out. And I had to take it apart, and it was a ground wire. There's a big metal frame in there, and the ground wire was loose. It just had to be kind of wiggled and secured down. But it's such a cool project. I see it as the future of this channel, of taking things and transforming them into other things, because it was so fun, it was so challenging, that it's what I'm excited about. We have I think the next thing that I want to do is we have this super cheap Amazon coffee table in one of the rooms. And I remember 3 years ago, Evan and Caitlin came over, and they were going to stay in this one large room while they were here. I'm like, oh yeah, we need a coffee table for this room. So I just bought the cheapest one on Amazon. It was like 50, 60 bucks. And now I want to take that and take a $50 Amazon table and turn it into, you know, a $500 table. So I want to just transform that. And so I kind of see that as the future moving forward for the channel.
That's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Future.
Right on.
I've been working on, there's this thing that we're about to announce. I guess it'll be announced tomorrow, which is supposed to be Thursday. And today is supposed to be Friday. So you will know about it by now if you pay close attention.
What?
The Rockler 2x4 Challenge. Chris Burton from A Glimpse Inside initiated this challenge with Rockler. And you get three categories of making. You have a 30-minute, a 2-hour, and a 24-hour build with a 2x4. So me and the other judges, each one of us did our own version of the video, which we'll release tomorrow. And it'll introduce the challenge and talk about it. So I worked on that for the last couple of days. It's been challenging, to say the least, because suddenly I have to make these things. We knew about it for about 3 weeks, but it kept getting put off. And then finally I said, all right, there's no denying we have to start this, meaning me and myself.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to do that with our collaboration.
Right. I'm going to do it like minutes. Minutes. Yeah. You're going to be working on it with your feet while you're driving down to.
Yeah.
Me too. Guarantee it. It's still wet. The resin's still wet. Just don't touch it right there. Yeah. That's what's going to happen for sure. But I've been working on that, and I have an interesting video. I discussed with you guys the machete video, where I took a round saw blade, a 16-inch saw blade, and made a 24-inch machete out of it. How? You're going to have to watch the video and see.
Oh, I cut a donut. I don't know. I didn't do it.
I cut a donut out of the middle, and then I sliced open one edge of the donut, and then in the blacksmithing shop, we opened it up. Meaning me, myself, and I. We opened it up and made it into a machete to cut pizza and weeds and other things, which will all be in the video. So that video will be out this week. That was a fun one. And I'm still moving along on the boat. I haven't been showing too much socials on it. The bottom's getting close to being closed. I think I'm probably going to try and shoot for the month of September to be done. I said August, but so many other projects have come up. I've taken in some client work. I have to make two more cups, which I'm going to start working on right after this podcast. Taylor's going away for a month, not really a month, but maybe just under a month. So that's going to put a little bit of stress on things. She's going away with her family to Europe. And so I'm going to be busy with the dogs and the whole farm by myself. And I'm going to do some, don't anybody tell Taylor this, but I'm going to do some planned house renovation. I'm going to pull a Taylor Forrest on Taylor Forrest. Every time I go away, she like rips out a room. She knows I'm not around, to be like, don't move that. Don't touch that. Leave that nail on the wall. Don't move that plug, you know, which is what I would do if she was here, if I was here with her. So while she's gone, I'm going to do some home renovations that she's unaware of. Don't. If you tell her, do not rat on me. I'm talking to you. You know who you are. So,
Gary.
Damn you. And that's about it. I haven't shown much progress on the barn, but we had some local guys doing the roofing on the barn, and they finally got some of the panels up. I'll probably do some stories on it this week. But finally, the roof structure has been on, but now we're getting some long-standing seam black roofing panels on. Yesterday they did about 6 panels, and today they probably will get more than halfway across one side. It's really high up in the air. Makes me nervous watching these guys. And besides that, we had 2 baby chickens this week on the farm, which is cute.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, really cute. And what else? That's it. Porch poles are in. Painting the porch poles. Porch poles are in. Handmade in Canada. So I'm going to be...
Oak?
No, we got pine. Hmm. Pine porch poles. And we're painting them right now with linseed oil in the shop so that when I trim them to fit, we don't have to paint them all that much in place. We could just touch them up in place. Yeah, so the porch project is moving along exactly 1 year later. Still halfway done. Cool. I was telling Justin Maybe came this week. If you guys know, Justin does documentaries on various makers. He's done, I think, about 16 of them. Well, this week he shot me, and he was overly impressed with the amount of stuff that I do in a week. And I said, I have projects that have been going on for over a year, and every day I just move every one of them along a little bit. Like I did a couple strips on the boat. We painted the porch poles. These are all long-term projects. And he just said, it's crazy how you just move each thing along. And it's for my own sanity. If they just sit there completely unattended, that drives me bananas. But if I give each one a little bit of attention, I feel like I'm making progress. And ultimately, each one of those little steps does add up to progress. So that's it. That's it for me.
Well, we are working on something. We're not putting out a video, normal video, this week, but we're going to do, I think I mentioned last week, we're going to try to do a live stream for the first time. And, you know, I used to do Twitch every week, and it's been, gosh, that was like 2018, 2019 when I started.
25 years ago you did that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a lifetime ago. It was a long time ago. And so now we're going to try to do some live streaming on YouTube. Since we don't have a video this week, we're going to work on the video live and answer questions and stuff, just so that there's not nothing, you know. We want to put something out and make it fun and useful. So we're going to try that this week and see how it goes. I don't know how often we'll do that, but we're trying out a whole new streaming setup, new piece of software, and now we have like several people, whereas before it was, I think when I stopped streaming, Josh was the only one working with me, and now we have multiple people that can hold cameras and answer comments, and, you know, so it's can be a little more robust, I think. So I don't know, we'll see how that turns out, but we're working on a project that is pretty cool and will be out next week if everything goes right, and it's for the office, so that's pretty cool. And then I've been working on some car stuff here at the house. We're, you know, I told you we're still down a vehicle, so my Land Cruiser's still out of commission, so I'm working on other vehicles trying to get them to a drivable state. And we'll talk more about that in the after show, because I have an interesting little conundrum that I fell into yesterday. But so that's kind of what I'm doing. Not a whole lot different.
Did your car fall in half?
I'm not going to tell you now. I'll tell you
after
the
show.
After show, yeah.
Okay.
It's for that secret thing that we always talk about in the after show that the main show doesn't know about.
Yeah.
It's that one. Uh-oh. That thing. Yeah. It's fine, but it's good. Anyway, so my week's been a little bit weird because I'm working on this 2-week-long project thing and not really in a hurry to finish it, you know? I mean, I'm in a hurry to finish it, but without having a video this week and knowing that we're skipping, it kind of takes a little bit of the pressure off, which was the point. So it's kind of nice. Life is beginning to get busier and busier, so it's nice to have a little ease up on the work schedule just a little bit enough so that we can get everybody to soccer practices and school things and all this stuff that's beginning to ramp up now. So that's kind of what we're doing, man. I'm sure I've told you guys about the soccer thing, but we have, yeah, because I remember saying we have 3 kids on 4 soccer teams,
And oh boy,
it's just crazy. I do what I'm told, and I try to get people places where they need to be. But my wife is the one who's like beautiful minding the whole thing, like looking at the schedule floating through the air, and she's like, "Okay, if we take this person, and we got 15 minutes to get the other one to this thing," and it's crazy. So she's doing all the real work there, but wow. Craziness right now. So that's kind of what we're up to. Jimmy, you had an idea.
I had an idea based on a conversation I had with a friend recently, and I know I've had this feeling. I think we've all, as artists, we've all had this feeling, and it's when you spend so much time and energy on a project for a contract, typically, or you know, I guess in a smaller way as a gift, but a gift is a different situation. When you have a contract with somebody, even verbal or written, that you are going to make something for them based on your expertise and your artistic styling, and then you bring it to them and you do the big ta-da and they don't like it. Like, that is a gut punch that I've been through a few times. Have you guys experienced that one way or another?
It's been a long time since I've had that feeling. I think when I had that
one way,
I have, yeah, but I think it was more in the software side of things because I've never made a whole lot of physical things for people, but I would get that feeling a lot where I'd build some software thing and then it wouldn't work. It would work the way I thought it was supposed to, but maybe not the way they thought. And then they were disappointed. And then I felt like I was really far in, like I'd already committed a whole bunch of stuff to something that just didn't pay off.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be physical. It's only just because it's my own personal experience, but it could be something written, could be a video edit, could be software that you've written for somebody or anything, or photography, and then you go, "Man, look what I did," and they go, "Oh," and then you hear that big and like you hear the brake screech and you're just like, "Where do we go from here?" I've been there a few times, and this friend of mine recently built something and the client flat out rejected it, didn't like the way it looked, didn't like the quality of it. And when I asked my friend, I said, "What was there something about it?" And they said, "It wasn't my best work." And I was like, "Then what was it that was driving you to get it outside of the quality?" But maybe it was the deadline. This person said the deadline was so overwhelming that they just tried to like slide it in under the deadline, which they did, but compromised quality in the process. Learned a huge lesson. But in general, the idea of bringing work to somebody, whether it's under a deadline or not, and then either not liking it because of quality or not liking it because they just thought the color was going to be different. You know, there's this ongoing joke between me and my brothers where it's like when you take a project off your truck and you want to wrap it in a client's house, and I've been there several times, where you open the table up and you pull off the padding and they go, "Is that what it's going to look like?" They say that right there, you know, the day is just going down the tubes. Because yes, that's what it does look like. I'm not going to come here and repaint it in your living room. But when a client says that, and how many times has anybody ever heard that? "Is that what it's going to look like?" Just that, like that pops the balloon of the excitement, and you know you're going to leave with the other balance of the check that they owe you, whatever it is, the second half of the payment. Is that what it's going to look like? Man, that is a real kick in the gut. So I told my friend, I said, the advice that I gave this person and the advice that I've tried, that I've done a few times, is just full refund. And I say, you can keep the piece. Because now it's a mental anchor for me. Like if I bring this table back home and it's what it's going to look like and they don't like the color of it, they don't like the way they thought it was going to be higher, or is this the height, like you pull a table out and they go, "Is this the height of a dining table?" And then I'll have to pull my ruler out and show, yes, it's the exact height as the dining table in your other room. Somehow it doesn't feel, maybe it's just like an eighth of an inch too high. And then like you think you're going to be out in the driveway filing an eighth of an inch off the feet. You're just like, in many cases I've said, keep the down payment. Not many, maybe there's been maybe three or four times in my entire career where I was like, keep the down payment and keep the project. And then I leave and say, it was nice knowing you. Have a nice day. And that's it. I mean, and then you just literally lick your wounds and move on, because we got to remember, as artists, we can't make everything perfect. We think we can and we want to and we are expected to, but you can't always please the client. And this isn't about trolls or anything. This is about a personal interaction with somebody that's paid you to do something, and you have to please them. The other, my other approach, and this will be my last statement, my other approach with certain clients has been, wow, I really thought that color was going to look different. And I'll always have the sample in my pocket. In the past, I used to do this custom work a lot more often. And I pull the sample out and say, this is the color sample you approved. Wow, the color really just doesn't, like in that big of a piece, the color just doesn't, it doesn't work for me. And then I would always say, you know what, live with it for a couple of days. And if you want to change it, we'll take it back and we'll repaint it. But I never, never get cranky or be like, well, you said this and you said that. You know, once I realized like the conversations, now I'm like dealing with a hostage situation. You know, I'm talking to somebody that has a gun to my head or a hostage's head, and you have to just kind of gently like, well, we're going to work this out. Whatever you want. We'll make. And then if you please that person in that type of way, the client, and you can say, whatever you want. You don't like the color? We'll change that color. Just live with it for a couple of days. I have some other work in the meantime. We'll get back in a week and we'll decide if you want to change the color. And then they'll be like slowly putting the gun down and going, really? You'll do what I want? They're like, yeah, whatever you want to do. Well, okay. But you'll do it in a week? You'll call me? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I'll call you in a week and we'll change the color. Well, okay. And then you leave.
You turn into a New York baby.
You leave and then you never hear from them again because they had to have that little weird power trip. And it could be their personality. They really, maybe gut punch, didn't like the color. But the minute you get contentious with that person is when they get contentious back. And then all of a sudden it's this, I'm going to see you in small claims court. Well, I did this and I. You know, when you get to that, is that what it's going to look like? In my mind, I just go, okay, I'm not making money on this one. This isn't a learning experience. This one's a learning experience on how to deal with someone's personality. This is a learning experience on how to manage expectations, which I thought I was doing. I need to do better. This is a lesson in taking a financial hit. Maybe I'm going to lose the $3,000 balance or whatever it is. But you know what? I'll get away with my reputation. And I'll get away with, if that my name comes up at a dinner table with that person, they're not going to be like, oh, that SOB, blah, 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 doesn't know how to talk to people. Instead, they go, you know what? I had a problem with that person, but they really helped me solve it amicably. And by the way, they gave me the piece for free. They didn't even charge me. You know, that type of thing, which I think is more important than winning that couple of $1,000 battle.
Yeah,
leaving with your reputation intact and basically saying, I'll do whatever it takes to make this work. And, you know, a lot, you don't want that every time. If you have that one in 100 interactions, then that's probably, you're probably doing really good. So
I had a conversation this morning with a friend, and her aunt is a sculptor in Germany. And she said this quote, and it just kind of, It's one of those quotes that just hit me. And she said, it wouldn't be art if it was perfect. And I wrote that down.
Yeah.
Because that really means something. That piano project, I could have gone on forever on that thing and just kept going, but it eventually has to stop. And while making that piano, my brother asked me, he's like, do you enjoy making things for other people? And I'm like, no, it totally stresses me out. If I was making this for myself, this would have been done a long time ago, and I would have been happy with this finish. But since I'm doing it for somebody else, I'm like looking at every single little detail, making sure the finish is perfect on there. And then I'm trying to cover all of my bases, and I'm telling Clay. So Clay had no idea what I was going to do. That was part of the thing. When I took on the project, he said, oh, so my wife has some ideas. And I was like, I won't do it if there's any input. I'm treating this as an art project. I will do whatever I want to do. And you can accept that or not. And he's like, yeah, I totally get that. And so I got to do whatever I wanted to do. I didn't send him any progress pics, and just I got to surprise him at the end. And it is so stressful making something for somebody else because you don't know how they're going to react. And I had a good reaction. He said he loved it. I think I believe him, but the stress of that was just unbelievable.
Yeah, So I had an interesting opposite story. When I was very young in my career, I was, you know, maybe, I don't know, 24, something like that. And I was running, a friend and I started a web development company. And so we were doing design, and I was building a lot of these, like, database-driven websites. So it was very technical, you know, reading data and just figuring out how to display it. And so we worked with this one ad agency a whole bunch, and we did a they did a bunch of trade shows. And so I built a bunch of these websites for trade shows, and it was where you could, like, this is back when this was difficult to do, now it's not, back when, like, you'd have a map of a trade show and you could click on it and zoom into it and see the details about certain booths and stuff like that. So it was at the time that was hard to do, and I spent a huge amount of time figuring out how to do this and building these different sites and everything. And so I took a lot of pride in the fact that I was doing something that most other people were not able to do. This is, you know, 1999, 2000, something like that. I don't remember. And this lady named Alan that we worked with a whole lot at this agency, a couple of times, she was great, but a couple of times she would give me feedback and just be like, this is not what it needs to do. Just real straight, you know, not like, oh, you did a good job, but it was just like, this is not what it needs to do, because she's running a big company and she's doing all this stuff. And I took offense to it because I had put in the work to do this, what I thought was difficult and what I thought was, you know, good enough and what, how I thought it should be. And her feedback just really, like, it made me put my guard up. And after this happened a couple of times, and I guess I was kind of throwing a fit about it and I didn't realize it at the time, she called me out to my face on the phone and said, you're acting like a martyr. This is your job. And I was like, whoa, I am being such a baby. I just didn't get it until she stood up to me and said, like, this is, I'm paying you to do a thing the way I want it done. You're not an artist. In this, she wasn't saying that, but the way I took it was, this isn't an art project. This is a functional piece of software that has to do this one thing. That's what you said you were going to do. And you're taking offense that I'm giving you edits. And in that moment, it made a huge impact on me that I needed to mature. I needed to stop acting like my work was so, that work was so precious, and that I was some special talent in this thing. That wasn't the case. And she was absolutely in the right. And it was a
really significant, good, really, 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 really important.
It was a significant comment. Moment for me as a purpose.
I could add to that.
Sorry, as a person and for the purpose of my work. To make a big switch. And I think now, if somebody, you know, said that same kind of thing to me, I don't think I would be in that same position, because I don't treat my work preciously, I don't think, now. But I think my reaction would always, ever since that moment, would be reactive to the way that she treated me right then, as she should have. I mean, I'm trying to be clear that she did the right thing. She called me out in a way that I needed to be called out, and it helped me going forward. So I was really grateful for that I didn't get my way, and then I wasn't allowed to continue to throw a fit and be immature in that, because I needed that slap in the face. So
that's great, because I said to my friend a couple days ago, when I said, look, you're just making furniture, you're not curing cancer, so let your ego relax a little bit, and, you know, climb out from under the couch, confront the person, and figure out the best way to handle it. And that might be immediately refunding the money, saying, you know, I'll promise I'll give you a better one. The way it turned out, and I don't know where the conversation ended up going, but he was going to offer making a completely new one, basically to save face with himself, and offering it for free. So taking back the reject one, making a new one, and offering it for free. I was like, that sounds very amicable. I would assume that the person would be okay with it. And if not, then you just have to say, some people just aren't easily pleased, and you just hopefully navigate your way around those type of people. But we got to remind ourselves, we're not saving babies and we're not curing cancer. You know, when that initial car accident happens and you get that call of, or that statement of, is that how it's going to look? Or you get that call of the client. You know, the worst is when you're dealing with a decorator. I've been there where the decorator says the client rejected the work. So now you're talking directly to somebody who's talking directly to them, and you're never allowed to actually be in the middle. You know, you only have to be on the end of the third chain of a three-link chain. And you get that gut punch, like a car accident, and then you're like, okay, let's try and clean this mess up. And put your ego aside and just do the best you can to figure out what it is. And in your case, Bob, is a great example of, you know, you were, some people just don't like getting it. I'm older and I've been through this and I'm completely worn down, but I did an advertisement that's going to be in the beginning of this next video, and the client wanted like 10 edits. And my agent was like, this is ridiculous. They wanted edits. They added things, lines that weren't even in the original script. Like suddenly some lawyer saw it and was like, oh, it needs to have these three other things in it. So when you watch it, it's kind of a patchwork of things taken at different times. There's only two things. I ended up doing two audio sessions. Audio didn't match and the background tried to match. It's horrible. Hmm. But ultimately they approved it. After getting scabbed together with all these various lines, they needed edited. And the ad is like a minute long, and it probably has 100 words in it. But the sequence of those words had to be a certain way because they don't want to get in trouble. But I read what they gave me the first time, and my agent was flipping out. He's like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, I don't care. It's easy to fix. It's not a big deal. I'll do whatever they want as long as they're happy with it.
So another thing that is connected to all this, but – it's something I learned about myself, have been learning over the years. And I think this is a little bit different than you doing client work. And David, you like doing things for the sake of the art of it being a piece of art. I wrote software for a long time, and it was always for other people. I mean, I did a few projects for myself here and there, but it was like, you know, somebody needed a website to do this thing or needed a kiosk to do this, whatever. And so I would just get a brief, make the thing the way I thought it needed to be made, and put it out there. The thing that always bogged me down about every single one of those projects, no matter where I worked, no matter what the client was, was that first 80% was so much fun. And the first 90%. And then that last 10% of, okay, but there's a bug on page 14 at line whatever, and you got to, you know, trace this one little weird thing back to the thing and figure out why it's doing that. And I'd spend a week on one little irritating thing. I realized through all of that that I think my skill and my preference are both at the prototype stage. I love to rough something together and get it working.
Yeah.
Not 1,000%, but like 80-90%. Make it do its job. It doesn't have to do it perfectly. It doesn't have to do it beautifully, but if it can do its job. And so I found that I am much more of a functional builder than an aesthetic builder. And I'm both in software and in just like physical things.
Yeah.
And that has led me to avoid client work and avoid customer type, you know, the stuff that you guys are talking about, because I know that I'm going to get almost to that end point where they want those details about paint and about finish. And that's just not what I care about. And it's not what I'm good at. And so I found that I actually need to avoid that type of work so that I'm not, you know, committing to them something that I can't pay off.
Yeah.
But I'm also just not going to be unhappy with the fact that I'm doing work that I don't want to get to the end of it because I don't like that end part, you know. So that has, through all of the projects on YouTube and everything, that has been a thing that I also don't have a great way to explain to the audience that the end result doesn't really matter to me that much. You may think that I'm not going all the way with finish or with design or whatever, but that's not my thing. That's not where I'm enjoying the time. I'm enjoying the, you know, how do I make a thing that can crush a coconut out of a clamp? Like, I don't care what it looks like.
Right.
But that's getting to that thing, that's the interesting thing. So, and the reason I bring that up is because I think it can be very easy for a lot of people to see people who do custom work, client work, furniture, or YouTube stuff, and they see that end result, and they think, well, yeah, that's what everybody does. You end up with a beautiful thing. In any one of those situations, that's the end goal. I'm not there, and so I think people need to hear that that may not be the case for everybody. And then there's a lot of people you can look at. You can look at videos of certain people who, you know, the beautiful end goal is not the point. It's the process to get there or the experimentation. That's their fun thing. And so, anyway, just want to bring that up because it is a bit different.
I mean, that was my life for, you know, 15 years as I was a web developer. And there's so many things that you do to try to avoid that car crash at the end. You know, you have wireframes, you have mockups, and you're trying to meet expectations. And then sometimes when that project is done, you are so proud of it. You love the way it looks. And sometimes it's not anything like you expected because there's been so many changes along the way. And one of the reasons I love doing what I do now is that I don't have client work because I dealt with clients for 20 years. And that stress and that we were working together and then you don't like that and now it turns into this mess and I can't put that in my portfolio because it didn't end up the way it should. And so now I get to do whatever I want. And the end for me does matter. The aesthetics, the last 10%. And that's where I completely differ from you, Bob, is that process is fun. But it's that last 10%. It's the way it looks. It's how
you're
I feel
the client
when I look
that you
at that
have
thing.
To please. So you're
exactly
you're completely fulfilled.
You just nailed it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that I think I'm becoming closer to that what you're talking about. And I think it's the Karman Ghia is what's making me begin to value that more because it's such a big thing, and I'm just. Honestly, I feel like I'm just barely into it. But I know that if I put in years of work towards something and then I get to the end and I skimp on the last 10%, like, what am I doing? Like, what's the point of that? It's not like I put in a couple of weeks and then I skimped on the last 10%.
Not to mention the Karman Ghia is going to be like a big showpiece for you. Once you finish it and you bring it around to friends and family, everyone's going to be like, there's a bump here. Did you see this bump? Maybe you missed this. You know, you don't want
that. Did you spray paint this?
But, did you use a roller or did you use a brush to get this?
Actually, it's funny because the person that had it before me did use a roller. You could tell. But I think there are some things that I'm, like with R2-D2, it was something I probably could have rushed through faster, but I cared about that thing looking right, but it was absolutely for me and for nobody else. And I don't think if somebody had asked me to build them an R2-D2, I would not have wanted to put that amount of effort into something for somebody else. I guess that sounds really selfish, but
it's true though.
That's just not where I would want to spend that time. So I think, David, I think I'm becoming closer to what you're talking about in regards to my own projects, not other people's, but I guess that's a maturity thing. I don't really know.
Yep.
But this is not really related, but I wrote it down and I forgot to mention it earlier. So I guess maybe it is kind of related. A few weeks back for my wife's birthday, she wanted to go out on the water. And so we went, I think I told you guys, we went out on a river and we had a kayak, a little plastic kayak, and we kayaked around with kids. And then we came back for the evening and then we have these inflatable like SUP boards, like a stand-up paddle board. And we had never used them, so we took them to the lake and went around on the lake on these paddle boards for the first time. And so as we were, like, paddling around, I realized that I don't like paddling on a stand-up paddle board. It's just not very much fun. But I sat down on it and treated it like a kayak, and that was a lot more fun. It was more relaxing and everything. And so as I'm out there on this lake, sitting on this big balloon paddling around, I thought, I kind of get why people make kayaks now. Maybe I should make a kayak. And I thought about you, Jimmy, because you were like pushing me a while back to like, yeah, you should make a boat or something. And I had no interest at all. And now I'm kind of thinking, maybe I should make a kayak.
Yeah, but PAX, the reason I bring that up is
that's one of those things that, you know, you got to see it all the way through and you got to. Yep. Put the time in to make make it sealed. I mean, otherwise it's going to sink, right? So that last 10% is pretty important there. But so you may have may have convinced me to make a kayak. Maybe. Nice. We'll see. Maybe yep. not. It's almost winter time.
It's going to be fun. No. Make it over the winter so in the spring it's ready.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But.
Yep.
Well, any other thoughts on the work for other people thing?
I think just as in general, like, whether you do makes things for money or for a living or for fun, it's how awesome is it that we get to make things? Mm-hmm. Whether you're the weekend warrior and you get to cut things up in your garage, you know, during your off time, like, it's you're still making something and just do everything you can to enjoy that process. Some people enjoy making things for other people and some people don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth experimenting with those different options and see which one sticks with you, you know? I think I was trying to say before, I don't know if I said it well, was just because other people make client work or commission work or make things to sell at craft shows or whatever, that doesn't mean you have to do that, but it's worth giving it a shot to see if it lands with you. And you might find that it doesn't, and there's another way for you to make stuff that fits better.
I'll tell you a funny story. When I was in the School of Visual Arts, I was a student in New York City School of Visual Arts, and we would have our portfolio classes in the waiting room because for some weird circumstance, we had this new portfolio class that never existed before, three-dimensional illustration. It was me and 10 others. It was 10 of us together. And we would meet in the chairperson's waiting room. The waiting room to get in to see Richard Weil was the chairperson of our department. So he volunteered his waiting room because it was only like 9 of us, really, and the teacher. And we would just sit there and discuss the work we did each week. It was kind of like a little meetup. And outside Richard's office in his waiting room wall, and we would always meet like on a Friday night at like 6 or 7 o'clock. So we always, it was like the school was locking itself up like while we were finishing our class. It was always like the last. So there was never anybody in there. But on the walls of Richard's office, there was all these posters and bits and pieces of art from Milton Glaser and all these various different pieces of like famous graphic design pieces. And one of them might have even been something Richard did. It was a poster. It just said "The Client." And it was this scribble drawing that somebody did of "The Client" was the name of the poster. You might even be able to just 1980s, 70s poster, "The Client." And it was a scribble drawing of a client who's scribbled drawn to look like a monster. And every time I see that, I used to think, can it be that bad? Like, this was this world-renowned graphic designer's impression of the client, and he drew this scribble drawing of what looked like Frankenstein. And he had glasses, and he was behind the desk. It was kind of more like a bank manager, but he was also the guy who hired you to do his logo, his corporate ID, whatever. And every time we have these type of conversations or when I talk to anybody about, I mean, even like I talk to Derek all the time about the signs he's making for people, and you work for somebody, you make them a sign, they're like, oh, the color's a little off. I picture that poster of the client. I always picture that poster. I don't know how I'm ever going to find an image of that to send you guys.
I'd love to see this. Yeah.
But that little impression that was left with me in the 80s, I still think of it. Even when I had this conversation with my friend the other day about furniture, I immediately imagined that poster of the client and like always be wary of the monster within. You don't want to awake the monster within. And I guess, like I said, if you know, going forward, if you do deal with these type of things, just remember that right after that initial gut punch, just remind yourself, no one's going to die. This isn't the end of the world. This you can't make everything perfect. You can't please anybody. And then just deal with the cleanup. You know, get the paper towel, stop mopping up the orange juice. Got to deal with it. That's it. You spill orange juice.
How did the orange juice get on the floor?
Yeah, that's it. Why are my socks sticking to the floor? You got to make sure you clean up all the orange juice.
I'm doing a search. I really want to see this poster. I can't find anything. There is a poster that says "Never kill a client."
Look at Richard Wilde, the client poster. Richard Wilde.
Also good advice.
So it's a gut punch, but you're gonna have to get it once in a while.
Yeah,
yeah.
It'll happen, regardless of whatever services you provide. You know, even if you're a dog walker, you walk the dog, and the dog comes home and then poops in the house, and then they call you. Did you walk my dog? And you're like, I walked the dog. Why did he just poop in the
There's
house?
There's orange juice all over the floor.
Why did he just spill orange juice on my computer tables? I have no idea.
Okay. Anyway, I'm mixing some metaphors. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters, unless you guys have anything else.
Sure.
Right. We're good. Big thanks to everybody that helps us out over on Patreon. They're awesome, and we're really grateful for them. Everybody that helps us out at every level on Patreon gets the after show, which we do after this show, and we talk about secret stuff and upcoming stuff, and I'll tell about the two-week project that we're doing and the other secret thing that I mentioned. But if you want to get that show, it's another 15, 20 minutes or so. I don't know. It changes. But if you want to get that separate feed, then you go to patreon.com/makingit. And join up at whatever level. But there's a top group of people over there that help us out. They've been around for a long time. We're really grateful for them. They are Corey Ward, Albers Woodworks, Works by Solo, Chad from Maincrafting, You Can Make This Too, Fun Kiss Artistic Creations, Rich at Lowen Designs, Odin Leather Goods, Full Steam Designs, Scott Oram, Warren Works, Michael Menegin, and Gretchen Hoffer.
Thank you.
Gretchen has not responded to tell me that I was saying Hoffer wrong, so I'm just going to hope that I'm saying it. Yeah, we're just and I'm working on Michael's Menegin. I think it's right.
Menegin.
No, but there's also people like let's see, Ryan LaValle. He's another one of the patrons.
Thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, grateful for all of them.
Thank you.
So, do you guys have anything to recommend? I don't. So I'm gonna secretly, quietly go look. Don't tell anybody. I'm going to go try to find something while you recommend things.
I was going to say, while I was over in England, I got to meet in person Ruth Amos, who has a small channel called Kids Invent Stuff. And some of the people in the community try to pit us against one another. But we got a chance to meet and have a nice conversation. And Ruth is very sweet, and she's doing good things in the community. But check out her latest video on her personal channel, which is Ruth Amos, A-M-O-S. And Ruth does the due diligence of trying to create her own saw stop, which is pretty incredible.
Oh, that's right.
And it actually, she did get it to work, although not usable. She basically had like a sturdy prototype, and Colin Furze makes a cameo in her video. He's really cute because he's just like, I wouldn't turn it on. Good luck. And like steps aside. But check out Ruth Amos DIY saw stop. I wonder if SawStop is going to give her some guff because of this, but she doesn't. Mm. She absolutely has no intention of using it. She just wanted to see if she can go through the mechanical iterations of getting something to work, and she does.
Cool.
Well, mine is for editors, especially editors using Final Cut Pro and Motion. There's a channel, Dylan Bates. Kind of a smaller 23,000, just has the best Final Cut Pro tutorials, Motion tutorials. Motion's like After Effects, but made by Apple.
What is the name of the channel? I'm sorry, I was reading some.
It's called Dylan Bates.
I'm writing this down.
The Final Cut Bro. And his editing, like his videos are really short. There is no fluff. You get right into the tutorial.
Love it.
And you get right out. And it's how tutorials should be done. And I've learned so much. The Final Cut Bro.
Cool.
Love it.
You didn't give me enough time. don't have anything. I have not watched anything lately. Anything new. I mean, I could talk about something as, you know, some of the same people I've mentioned a million times before, but I really don't have anything new. It's been a while since I've talked about Aging Wheels. But you guys, have you guys watched Aging Wheels?
Yep, I've seen them. Thank you.
Yeah. He's just a lot of fun to listen to. And I learn a lot from his videos. He actually has two channels, Aging Wheels and what's the other one called? He has a woodworking channel too. Dead. I'm blanking on the name. I'll put a link to Aging Wheels. You can go check it out. But it's all car stuff. He does some really wild... he seems to have like a million cars, but then he like swaps them out and fixes them, and I don't know. It's a lot of fun. So go check out Aging Wheels. And I think he listens to the show. So hey, if you're listening to the show, thank you and good job. Keep it up.
Underdone is the name of his woodworking channel.
Ah, there we go. Cool. Well... You guys got anything else for this week?
That's it.
Okay. Cool. We'll be talking about the collaboration thing a little bit for Maker Faire Louisville a little bit more over the next few weeks. So if you have any ideas about what we could do with it, how we could give it away, or like, you know, any ideas around that, let us know. I know we're being vague about what the idea is right now, but we'll talk about it later on. Yeah.
It's cool. Such a good idea. Yeah. It really is. It
only took us 25 years to get to.
Yeah. So
that's cool. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Love you.